Make sure you get us loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
This is Chris Harding, and you are listening to Used Wigs Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio, podcast number 43. Tonight, we'll wrap up our 12-part series on spastic colons and the brief people who live with them. Oh, wait, that's NPR. Tonight, Used Wigs Radio will be talking about cartoons and comic strips and candy canes. We'll also be interviewing Chris Harding, the creator of the hysterical online comic We the Robots, www.wetherobots.com, and so much more in this jam-packed show. I am Jeff Lyons. On my right is Toddley McTodderson Marone of toddmarone.com, and Rusty Static is manning the knobs. Happy 2008, fellas. Ross, are you manning the knobs?
I am manning the knobs. That makes him a knob manner.
Actually, you know what that makes me think of?
What?
I found out today the origin of the phrase balls to the wall.
Really, Russ?
Yes, Jeff.
Is it something to do with what's in my pants, or is it something a little less lascivious?
Do you guys know?
I have no idea.
It doesn't have to do with testicle reference?
Actually, where it came from was during World War II, the guys in the planes, they had like the sticks, almost like stick shifts.
They're called penises, Russ. Oh, no, you're talking about the actual
stick. Like the controls in the plane, and they had balls on the top of them. Ooh. And just like we were saying, pull out all the stops on an organ, like when they pushed the balls to the wall, it meant that
You just said pull out all the stops on the organ. That's another funny penis reference.
Well, when they pushed the balls to the wall, it meant that they were doing some, you know, very dynamic or like really pretty hairy flying.
So it's like the plane equivalent of pedal to the metal.
That's exactly it.
And it's also, when people say pushing the envelope, people think it's some sort of actual, like a real envelope and you're pushing. That's also a flying term.
Yeah.
Right. The envelope is something, I don't know, I'm not a man, I didn't watch Top Gun, but the envelope is something, if you fly so fast or so high, you hit the envelope. So when you're saying you're pushing the envelope, you're getting close to reaching that landmark.
Yeah.
Hmm. Speaking of flying saying, did you know that all air traffic control chatter is in English throughout the entire world? Like, if a plane flies from one place in a complete foreign country, from Italy to another city in Italy, all of the communication from the towers and in the cockpit are in English.
Really?
For uniformity, yeah. Huh.
So then every pilot has to be bilingual?
Or monolingual, if you're a stupid American.
Let's say you're LL and you're flying your plane. You're going to, I guess most of those people do speak English too. Guys, that just really died a death, that conversation right there.
And nothing to do with cartoons or comics or candy canes yet.
But we're going to rebound nicely about comics, cartoon, and candy canes. Because as I mentioned, we're going to be interviewing very soon Chris Harding, the creator of our favorite online comic, We the Robots, at wetherobots.com. We'll be talking to him soon. And we'll also be discussing a lot of comic cartoon talk, stuff we like now, stuff we liked back then, et cetera, et cetera.
Before we play our first song, can we just please shout out, a little early shout out.
Yow!
To Todd's beard.
Todd's beard.
That he's brought along.
I like it.
Thank you.
Is that real?
It's absolutely real. It's about, I guess, it's going on like 1.5, 2 inches long now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, because I'm an expecting father within the week.
Yeah.
And I feel like I want my son to think I'm wise.
I think it's going to take more than that.
As a matter of fact, I want to look like a wise man going through the maternity ward. You know, like,
I think you should invest
I actually have frankincense.
You should invest in one of those wizard hats with, like, the moons and stars on it.
That'd be good. Can I bring you some myrrh? Do you know what myrrh is?
It's an oil, a balm.
A salve. Okay, guys, let's play a song. And tonight we're doing something very exciting that people will be talking about all week long. Instead of playing just a bunch of random songs, we're going to play three songs from one fabulous label. That's right, we're going to play songs from Friendly Fire Records, a small independent label in Brooklyn, New York. It's friendlyfirerecords.com. And the first artist we'll be playing is Elk City, and this is Cherries in the Snow.
Down with her.
And we're back, people. Used Wigs Radio podcast number 43. We are highlighting Friendly Fire Records, and that was Elk City. They're also out of New York, much like the label. And that's their song, Cherries in the Snow. You can find out more about Elk City at www.elkcity.net or go to friendlyfirerecords.com. I really like that song. I like songs where women sing and men play instruments. What do you think of that?
As it should be.
That's exactly as it should be. Speaking of, there's a new movie out about like a girls' rock school, and I posted on News Wigs, but it looks really
straight
good.
DVD?
No, I think it's gonna be one of those. You know, it'll be released on you know, the indie circuit, blah blah blah. But if you watch the trailer and like I think Carrie Brownstein from that band I like, Sleater-Kinney, is in it. And it's just, it actually, with all this stuff, with all the celebutard girls out there, just giving horrible examples to, you know, young women out there.
So you think this is promising?
This is awesome, yeah. I mean, it's called Girls Rock. And if you just type in the Girls Rock movie trailer, I know, but it's like School of Rock. But the kids are so cute in it. Mm. And it's just like, you know what? I have a young daughter, and I'd rather see her as a 6 or 7 year old girl playing bass, having fun, listening to rock music.
Then, like watching a movie about shopping with Mary Kate and Ashley.
Exactly. Then dressing up like a princess, wanting to, you know, everything princess is, princess that. I'd want her doing that, or I'd want her, you know, digging in the backyard.
Well, then you should get her a tattoo right now.
I'm
set the table.
I don't want her to be a suicide girl, Todd, for Christ's sakes. As much as I know that you like suicide girls.
Hey, so cartoons, comic books, and candy canes was the third one?
I just throw in candy canes.
Maybe we can just knock candy canes off the agenda.
All
right,
no candy canes.
Is there anything
canes.
We need to say about candy canes?
I heard they're delicious, but much like jelly beans, I've never had one in my life.
You've never had a candy? What do you mean you've never had a jelly bean also?
Never had
what
a jelly bean.
Punch that just was.
Never
Why?
Had a candy. I don't like candy. I don't like fake looking food. So if you look at a jelly bean, that glowing green is so unnatural, I would never eat it.
Will you eat a candy bar? Because it looks like a turd?
No, I chocolate is fine because it's kind of natural, but I won't eat anything like Starburst.
You've never been given a candy can like when you were a little kid in school? You know, like, oh, the holidays are coming up here. The teacher passes out candy canes.
I've been given it, and I shove it right back in their face, and I say, save it.
As a kid?
As a kid, yes.
So you're a vegetarian and a...
Yes.
Candidarian? Like, what's...
I just don't partake in nonsense food. That's nonsense food. That's just, like, nonsense. I don't want any part of it.
What a conservative eater you are.
I'm no fun when it comes to...
You've never eaten a candy, because you've never had the joy of sucking on a candy cane until it got, like, razor sharp and then jabbed
I have been there. I get that because I don't ever crave a candy cane, and I certainly like the things that are more natural desserts and stuff like that than that weird like what was like you know Fun Dip and even like Skittles and Spree and like
I don't
real,
think our
like,
bodies are programmed to crave synthetic flavors though.
Maybe.
Don't you think? Because I think like when we have cravings, it's usually like a physiological response or need of some sort. Like you crave salt. And you crave carbohydrates.
Well, people do crave chocolate.
Back ooh, that one's important.
I mean, people do. But I have a funny candy story. Did I tell you guys this already? That one of my little guilty pleasures when you go into diners, you know, like there's those little those mints, and they have the jellies in the inside of them.
Yes.
Ugh.
I love those things. But you, the only place you can get them is diners.
Do you chew them and bite into them, or do you suck them until you get the jelly?
Okay. But there was like a study done one time where they did a test on those things, and I found that there was more fecal matter found on those mints than in the bathroom because people come out and don't wash their hands and they touch them and all that kind of stuff. And even the ones with the spoon, I'm just very leery, but I love the taste of them. So my wife knew that, and she went to go to try to get me some of those for fun. And you can't get them in the stores. So she found a diner supply online somewhere and bought me a case.
Ugh.
Nice.
Because it's the only you can only get them in cases.
Now, did you find that when you eat them fresh, they're not as good because they don't have the fecal matter on
no,
them?
No, like, they're actually great.
Okay.
There's like 20 boxes of them.
You should put one by your door.
I was thinking about it actually.
I wouldn't mind that as I come and go.
Growing up, what Saturday morning cartoon was the cartoon that you made sure waking up that this is, I have to make sure I'm up by this time to see it? Because Saturday mornings were just magic for everybody.
For me, it was the professional wrestling cartoon.
Okay.
Because I was a big wrestling fan, and when that made its way to the animated world. I was very excited to see like the animated version of the Junkyard Dog.
Huh.
And also Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
That was serious.
That was fantastic.
See, I'm a little older. You know, I'm 52. And
so Felix the Cat was your favorite.
No, but like
Jeff watched Steamboat Willie on
a TV. I really did. No, there is a thing called the Justice League of America.
Which was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And you would, there was nothing. I mean, it started out where it was just, you know, like the Super Friends, and it had like these a boy and a girl who wore like little capes.
Wendy and
the guy with the red hair.
And the dog.
And that was fine. But when they brought it to Justice League, where they had the Legion of Doom and then Zan and Jaina, and there were like 50 characters, that was just mind-blowingly good. You were just like, holy crap, who's the Indian who grows into a giant?
Yeah.
Who's the samurai? I don't know.
What was his name, Todd?
I think he made that up.
Geronimo?
No. There was a guy who did that.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about both Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and the one you're talking about is if you're a comic book fan, you tuned in to catch a glimpse of the peripheral characters. Like,
that's exactly it.
In this one? You know, like when he was an unknown.
Right.
You know, so yeah, you're waiting for an obscure character that you like from a comic book to make an appearance.
Yep.
Good point.
I have to say, and it's a very guilty pleasure, but like at that time, I was so into arcade
Care Bears.
Oh yeah, I was very into Care Bears. But I was, and then remember the knockoff, the shirt tails,
mm-hmm.
right? And they all had different things that the shirts could do.
Digger was the mole. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's a knockoff of Care Bears.
That's right, Bogey. He talked like
Humphrey Bogart.
This ain't going good.
Yeah, that's not going anywhere good. But do you remember?
Hey, friend.
They had the Pac-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
And like the Q-Bert cartoon and all kind of stuff. I knew it was bad, even at the time I knew it was lame, but I was so into video games that I would watch it and I would get excited about it because I just loved the whole video game, the idea of the video game culture and the video game world. You know?
When the Pac-Man cartoon premiered, that was big news.
Pac-Man.
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 I must have those power pellets! Don't buy me the power pellet bonus!
Yeah.
And I remember being over my cousins, and my one-year younger cousin crying hysterically because she had dance class and was going to miss the premiere of Pac-Man, and it was a mess. And her brother and I sat there and watched it, and she came home and was still in tears about missing it, and like we had to explain to her what happened and what it was like.
I remember we watched it, and I was late for my sociology class, and we were so like
he was smoking a bomb.
I was so effed up. All right, we'll get back to voting. We'll get back to this this talk voting. I'm gonna go take my Centrum, and we're gonna play a song for you. Also on Friendly Fire Records, this is a band called Camphor. That's Camphor, and this is their song "Confidences Shattered."
While we were blind, stole our car and drank our wine, fumbled around inside of our drawers, crept in and kept us up until dawn. Then you left us broken, scattered, out of breath and flattered. Confidence is shattered. Charm and grace with the devious style, a beautiful face and a dangerous smile. Waltz right on in any time that you like. Waltz on out whenever the mood strikes you. And you leave us broke and scattered.
People, Use Wigs Radio Podcast 43. That was a band called Camphor, C-A-M-P-H-O-R. Do either of you know what camphor means?
Isn't it like an oil or something?
Yes!
I thought it was going to be a joke, like, what's a camphor?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, 5 or 6
it's
pounds?
Like, it's like a cod liver oil or something like that.
It's a it is a substance used in religious ceremonies as a moth repellent, ingredient in fireworks, and also for embalming the dead.
Oh, wow. I thought it was something that you took.
You could. It also
it
medicinal
you,
purposes.
It would embalm you.
Yeah, it could embalm you. But that's a great band, Camphor. You can check them out at camphor.net or also on Friendly Fire Records. Hmm. So, what would Todd, you are, I've never seen you more excited and animated, I may say, talking about these horrible, I would say, video game-based cartoons, which is completely lost on me because I'm a purist. I like more of the cartoons,
yeah.
not the product shilling crap that you were watching.
You know, I think people listening to our podcast, if they're in their 20s or their teens, they don't understand the magnitude of the Saturday morning cartoon, because now there's kind of an odd cartoon that might, and it's not even new.
Well, plus there's a Cartoon Network they're on all the time.
Yeah. But like when we were young, they promoted their Saturday morning lineup
on a Friday night.
Yeah,
I remember the Friday night at the end of the summer. It's horrible going back to school, but it'd be like Friday night, September 2nd. We're gonna give you the rundown, kids. Hold on to your horses. Here's the rundown. We're going to give you 2-minute clips of all your favorite shows. And you're like, oh my God, you know?
Wait till that comes on. Right. And like when you read your comic books and magazines, there would be like 3-page spreads of the ones that were slated to come up for the new fall season.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal. And plenty of them, just like sitcoms today, they came and went really fast because they were always trying new things. And back in the 80s, they latched their talents in anything that like kids liked. So there was the Rubik's Cube cartoon where it was I'm telling you.
Yeah, there was.
There was a Rubik's
what are you
Cube.
About?
There was a Rubik's Cube that had an alien face plastered to the side of it, and I think his name was like Ruby the Rubik's Cube or something.
Is Rubik.
What? And he was a magical space alien, but just, you know, the Rubik's Cube was just so hot that.
You joking?
Yeah.
We have to find out. We gotta look.
There was a Punky
online.
Brewster cartoon.
That I do remember.
You remember, like, anything that was, like, even marginally interesting to young people. And then you know what came in? I'm gonna tell you what ruined Saturday morning cartoons.
All right.
Saved by the Bell.
It, you know what? It really did, because that was one of the first true kind of, like, soap opera for children on TV.
It was the first one. And kids liked it, and the producers recognized that, you know what, production costs are way less to just get a bunch of no-name actors and actresses that are 13 years old and let them walk up and down the hallway, you know? Yeah.
Quickly followed by California Dreams and Running the Halls.
And now Saturday morning, that's all you see is these crappy, like, made-for-kid TV shows.
Well, actually, all you see now is the networks have kind of just gotten rid of cartoons early in the morning altogether. They've taken their morning shows, you know, like CBS This Morning. Like, those shows are on Saturdays now and Sundays. Like, they're just on all the time. So if you're a kid, it's 8 o'clock, you have your bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
You know, if you're not going to the Cartoon Networks, you only have basic TV, you really can't find those great cartoons that you were once looking for. Did you know that? Do you know, you know who did, like, 50% of the voices for all the cartoons back in the day?
Casey Kasem.
Yeah. It's amazing. When you... like, hear him talk, and then you're like, all right, let me go and think back into the show.
The most famous is Shaggy.
Shaggy, and he does a bunch of... He did a bunch of voices on just random shows. You know what I mean? Like, you would watch, like, one of the knockoffs of Scooby-Doo. What was the one? There was, like...
Scrappy-Doo.
No, but it was another show where it had the, kind of the same group. Oh, Josie and the Pussycats. You know what I mean? There was kind of, like, the Fred character.
Well, and do you remember there were a couple shows where they actually teamed up?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you
and
would
that
see,
was awesome.
Like, both Freds. It was Fred and Alan.
Fred and Alan. And Alan, who was the one who wore the cravat? He wore the, I think that
I
was...
I know you're talking... And he had a black helmet head and he wore sunglasses.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I almost had it. I don't remember what
his name shows was. In the Pussycatch, right?
Yeah. And when they were all together, you could see they each had like a counterpart.
Yeah.
Speaking of Todd, you mentioned that on UseWigs, I posted those risque comic book panels.
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed
those.
Are fantastic. Go to usewigs.com and type in risque comic panels in the search, and you'll find it. There's a great website for that. We're going to take a break, and we're going to play a song by our last Friendly Fire band. And these guys are called the Wit Sundays. They're from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and that makes Russ very happy. And this is a little song called Sorry James.
What's gotten into you, James? Now you're eating white meat, you're wearing clean clothes. What in your head has gone wrong? Has the earth got you down? You're wearing a frown, sorry James. For you'll forever be the only one who's free.
UseWigs Radio podcast number 43, and that was the Wit Sundays out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and that's their self-titled release. It will be released January 22nd of this year, 2008. That was their song Sorry James, and you can check them out at myspace.com, The Wit Sundays. Russ, over to you.
Jeff, as promised, we have independent artist Chris Harding on the phone. the creator of We the Robots and various other funny shorts like Learn Self-Defense, Make Mine Shoebox. You can check that all out on his website, and we'll plug that again on the end. But Chris, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good, man. Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
Are you an expert in self-defense now?
I think I'm the opposite of an expert in self-defense. The guy that did the narration for that short actually is.
Oh, he is? Really?
Yeah, but that was just a coincidence. But he actually is a very accomplished martial artist.
Very nice. Very nice.
So that Learn Self-Defense, like, it seemed like that's the one that, that's the thing that you've done so far that kind of had the biggest buzz around it, at least initially, right? But is We the Robots starting to catch up now?
Yeah, I would say We the Robots has had more attention and, well, it's difficult to judge, but just kind of judging traffic-wise on the internet, We the Robots has had quite a bit more attention than anything I've done before.
Chris,
well, I'm sorry, the We the Robots is a living animal, though, too, so it seems like people will probably continue to tune in because you're constantly updating it, whereas when you see the animated short, then that's the experience and it's over.
That's right, and, I, you know, that's been an interesting thing to learn. You can sit down and put hundreds and hundreds of hours into an animated short, and people will go watch it, and it takes them, it's 5 minutes long, and they watch it, and they're done, and they say, oh, yeah, they like it or they don't. But with a comic, it's like you put an hour into it, or, you know, longer than that, but let's just say it's an hour, and the, you kind of get about the same impact.
So on your next project, like, am I going to spend 2 years of my life on a movie or a half hour or, let's say, an hour on a panel, a three-panel comic strip?
Exactly. It's incredible. I mean, I would love to be able to do animation much more quickly and update regularly, but...
But the instant gratification of working on something and then just uploading, hit, you know, FTP it up there, it's live. It's so great. I mean, the instant gratification, correct?
It's wonderful, and you can go straight. You know, there's no, there's really no kind of middleman involved, and you just go right to an audience.
Oh, so you don't send it to your manager, then he sends it to his boss, and then it gets edited and sent back to you, and then you have a meeting about it. None of that.
None of that, and it's beautiful. I mean, as a matter of fact, I used to do a comic strip with a syndicate about 10 years ago.
Huh.
And this happened right as I was graduating college. And the syndicate was, I mean, I don't have anything bad to say about it. Nonetheless, you're submitting it to an editor who may not share your exact sensibility. Although my editor was great, you know, it was, I don't know, I don't want to knock it, but I just, you know, there were just a lot more people involved, and it got more complicated, and I was a young cartoonist, so they would have me do, you know, I would do 10 or 12 roughs a week in order to get 7 kind of accepted.
Oh, wow.
And then above and beyond just the number of people involved is the time in which you conceive something and then execute it, and then it actually gets to the consumer. Whereas now, I would imagine it's a little bit more fulfilling. It closes the gap. You're not necessarily a stand-up comic where you're hearing the immediate reaction of an audience, but it's a lot closer where that evening you could post something and see their responses to it come rolling in.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. For me, that's about the right comfortable distance, too. I don't know that I'd want to be seeing anyone read it, or, you know, I don't know that I'd want to be right in front of the people that I'm...
Standing behind them at their desk and, like, nudging them like, that was a good one, right?
Well, you know, like a stand-up comedian, that would be a little too immediate for someone like me.
Yeah, I think me too.
But, you know, Chris, speaking of that, of kind of that work environment, I mean, based on some of the content in the We the Robots in particular, I mean, that stuff just hits so close to home. You had to have spent some time in some pretty oppressive corporate environments, right?
You know, not as much as you would think. I still do have, I mean, this isn't my job. This is, you know, this is something I do at night. And
right.
I don't want to drag them into my little world and embarrass them, but I really, for the creative people that work there, there are the obvious things that happen to creativity in a corporate environment.
Right.
But it's really a place that understands these things better than most places. I've worked a few other places that are much worse.
And, right.
But for the world of working in a corporation, it can be terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a handful of strips. I think I told you over email that one where the main character is Bob, right?
Bob, yeah.
Yeah, like that one that finishes, and it's pretty much just all silent, and then it just finishes with him in his car crying. I mean, like, I looked at that and I was like, oh my god, I have been there.
Yeah.
Well, I think Yeah, I think we have all. I mean, it's only if you have a certain perspective that that's even acceptable. I mean, how do I say this? I mean, if you look at most of the people in the world, there's some real suffering. You know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Corresponding with someone through email that had written me about that strip, that it had made her cry.
Oh, jeez.
Because she was on a business trip and had checked, you know, she'd been surfing the web from a hotel room and she had had one of those days. And I said, you know, it's really like we're warm and dry and we have enough to eat and yet you could go and sit in your car and cry after work and I don't know why. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
What is so, is it, maybe it's like a matter of expectation that you think it doesn't have to be stupid like this.
Right.
Like, in order to get the work done that this company actually accomplishes, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be stupid. I mean, we don't have to act like machines to get this done, and I don't know why it turns into that when there's a hierarchy.
Right. To reference another one of your strips, I think it has to do with a certain kind of person or a person that has a creative gene in particular is going to be in much more pain in an environment like that. And, you know, and then you have the other strip where, you know, the guy hears his soul dying during the day,
yeah.
You know, and he comes home and, you know, and he actually hears the gurgling and the death throes of his, of his soul dying at work. And I think it's that. And I know what you're saying, because when I felt those that way, I've left work saying, look, you know, my life, people would kill to have my life. It's weird that this is so painful, you know?
Yeah, and so it's a delicate line to walk where I don't want to say things aren't, you know, I don't want to whine, but yet there's like there's something soul crushing nonetheless, and I don't know what it is.
But
it's just that you grow up, you know, you're a kid, you're disappointed when you find out you can't fly.
Yeah, you're not the astronaut, you're not the cowboy, you're the guy in the cube.
Well, happiness and sadness, I guess, is relative, you know. So all of us have a slot reserved for our worst problem.
Yeah, and if you're American, that problem is you find out as you grow up you're not going to be rich and famous or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Whereas that slot might be filled in another country, like to eat or, you know, to be able to feed your children, which, you know, when compared head to head, there's not much of a competition. But again, it's the individual's worst problem. But, you know, the fact that someone would read that and connect to it and it would move them to tears, I think, is a real glowing review for your work as an artist. And I don't mean just as a visual artist, but as an artist in general, that you could drive someone, or I shouldn't say drive someone, but you could evoke that emotion both of sadness and of happiness. And obviously, it's very funny and satirical. So that must make you really proud.
Yeah, I would say so. This work that I'm doing now is more personal than anything I've done before. I've learned to let some personal stuff in there, I guess, that I wouldn't have done maybe 10 years ago, and it's actually it makes me proud, alternately proud and terrified.
Have you ever, like, since you control what goes up on the site and what goes down, have you ever posted anything, you're like, all right, this is great, then you read it and you're like, oh my God, I'm sharing too much, or this is too brutal, or this, and just taking it down, and, like, do you have that leeway to do that, or have you done that?
I reserve that.
That's good.
I haven't too much yet. The thing about the strip so far, the strip has only been running. I mean, I've been doing it live for just over 2 months.
Right.
And then, of course, I built up sort of a month archive before I went live. And I wrote, you know, most of the strips you're seeing now are maybe six months ago that I wrote them.
Huh.
So most of the ideas now have kind of had some time to ferment and not turn, you know, they're pretty much what I want them to be. But as I run out of that archive, which I am running out, I will probably be changing things more after they go up.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the recent one, the sorry, Mikey, you're not the blank blank. You driving the car with your son and you get cut off and a few expletives fly.
Yeah.
When I read that the day I actually did that, and it was me and my daughter in the car. And I said probably three of the most horrific words ever out of my mouth because I got cut off. And my daughter just, you know, repeated as best a 2.5-year-old could what I just said. And I was like, holy good Lord, I'm sorry. You know, you just, and then when I read that at work, I'm like, it was too weird that you posted it the day I did that. I'm like, good Lord.
Really funny. That's perfect. I have a 2.5-year-old as well, actually. And I had a similar incident while I was mowing the lawn. More broke down, and I don't know what I said. I wasn't aware that my wife had stepped out with our 2-year-old just as I was
The word shucks came flying out of your mouth?
Oh, who was boss? And it's really embarrassing. And then, they remember every single little...
Yeah, that was a bit brutal, and that hit a little too close to home for me. But now I'm more self-aware thanks to that and your strip. So that's a public service. You did some good there.
Cautionary tale.
It certainly is.
Okay, that was Automaton from the band No They Do, off the album When Robots Rule the World. I know, we're so clever. Let's get back to the interview with Chris Harding.
Do you see this having a ceiling that you might impose so that it, in other words, if it got gigantic, if your strip was read by hundreds of thousands or even millions of people, would that be uncomfortable to you, or would you feel like an increased responsibility to make it appeal more universally appealing? If someone came to you, could there be a We the Robots theme park or a theme restaurant?
You know, with this particular strip, I think what my thinking is that I will follow in a way commercially. Well, I would never write it with that in mind. I mean, I don't have the control over my writing to do that anyway. I mean, it just kind of has to be what it is. But commercially, if anything was to happen, I would probably take the robot's perspective. I think they would be excited to be in a commercial. Or
Chris, are you saying there's going to be product placement soon in your cartoons and you're going to go all corporate on us?
Totally. Like, there would be. But yeah. Only if it was done exactly the right way to where it was clear how this fit into this world. But
right. Why is Bob driving a Lexus and talking about it as he's driving it?
Yeah.
Hey, Chris. You know, I spent a good part of the day today, and I was a fan of yours prior, but really looking through some of your work. And a couple of things strike me. First of all, even though your current strip is very simple, it seems like you definitely know what's going on as far as the elements and principles of design. And I really have seen, looks like your color selections has really matured over the last couple of years and is really compelling. And the work, now I know and I read that you do the majority of it on the computer, but you know, kind of in the art world, there's that idea of the primacy of technique. And it seems to me that maybe either you're inspired by someone or perhaps you originally were doing collage work or like watercolor washes with marker on top. I mean, can you talk to us about the evolution of the visuals that we're seeing? Because it's very competently done, I think.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. I got an email yesterday from somebody who said, there's two things I look for in a good web comic that for me to read, it has to have two things. It has to have great writing and great artwork. But your comic makes me rethink number two. And I was like, wow, I get a lot of emails where people think, well, they equate simplicity with bad art.
Right. Yeah. Lack of effort, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as a matter of fact, I worked on the look of this comic for a very long time. It went through a lot of styles before I kind of came up with what there is now. And it's definitely designed to be simple and quick for me to do because I got to do it regularly and I don't have a lot of time. But
to communicate that much emotion with a couple shapes and a couple lines, I think is, you know, and as an artist, I can relate to that. It's very difficult. It's very complex. You know, it's not a matter of you don't know any better or don't know how to do it. I mean, that's what I get from it. I think that it's really, that you're very successful in doing that.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. It's deliberate. I can say that.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people seem to appreciate it, but they do, I do get a lot of email where people think, actually, everything else kind of gets in the way, I think. The more you're worried about the idiosyncratic anatomy of your character and stuff, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I'd like to see more muscles on these people and,
abs.
Yeah, maybe a little more anime. Something, just something to, you know, give it a little more, spice it up. You know, kick it up a notch or two.
Yeah, they're not, like, maybe if I could do it in, like, a 3D program.
That'd be great. You know, it would be awesome to see that.
Well, that's a thing. Like, first of all, anybody who would say that to you, like, really isn't paying much attention because We the Robots was a spinoff of that real detailed 3D animation that you were doing in the first place, right?
That's right. And that actually was in Flash, but it was, I was trying to build this thing that had a pretty tangible look, like the things really existed in space and had light on them and stuff. But that's kind of evolved since then, and the strip has helped me kind of simplify that short.
Well, a wise man can say a complex thing in a simple way.
What? Todd just confused us, or me. I apologize. Hey, Chris, since you write about robots, you have to be an expert on robots. So I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite robot movie?
Oh, man. Robot movie?
Yeah, you know.
So I'll say right now, I just got the Blade Runner box set for Christmas, and that's a good robot movie.
That's one of the best. Was this Ridley Scott's 482nd take on the film, or is this his? He really has to. I love Blade Runner, and I love it. He has to let it go, though. He keeps redoing it.
To watch the final cut and find that it was almost, I couldn't tell you what the differences were between this and the.
Oh, I'm sure if you go on a website, there's someone detailing 142 of the differences, you know?
Sure, there are. But they're mostly, they seem to be just that they cleaned up the movie and the sound mix seems more clear. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know that he changed a whole lot editing-wise. It's been a while since I've seen the other one, but.
Yeah, I just know a lot of the real fanboys, even the people who love the movie, are just like, okay, can we just leave it be now and, you know?
I'm all done with it myself. But it's a good, I don't know, that popped into my head, but I don't know, most robot movies suck. I mean.
Have you not seen Short Circuit?
About robots. Hey.
Short Circuit 2 was
Short Circuit
better,
2, yeah, there you go. I'd like to, I gotta recommend, this is, when I just love the topic of robots. There's a truly, and this might inspire you for part of your strip, there's a truly horrible movie called Deadly Friend.
Back
in 1986, this guy Matthew Labatro, who was in Little House on the Prairie, and Christy Swanson, who was Buffy the Vampire Slayer from the movie, Buffy, they made a movie where he's a new kid in town who has his own robot, and he befriends this really hot girl, and the three of them become friends, the boy, the robot, and the girl, and the girl dies. The girl's father kills her, but luckily this boy implants the brain of the robot into the girl, thinking that it will keep his girlfriend alive.
Or the other way around.
Plants the girl's brain to the robot.
Yeah, what did I say? Yeah. Anyway, this is a long story long. Anyway, Chris, the thinking would be all happy that he would have his girlfriend with the robot brain. She turns evil.
Oh, dear.
And all hell breaks loose. So I implore everyone just simply to go to YouTube and type in Deadly Friend Death Scene. Deadly Friend Death Scene.
Okay, I want to do that.
And that's all I'm going to say. And it's one of the best, worst movies you would ever see about robots.
That sounds wonderful.
And so I will follow that up, being an expert interviewer, Chris, and we will follow up a favorite robot movie. Do you have a favorite robot song? What about Russ or Todd? Any robot songs? You know lots of songs.
Well, Mr. Roboto comes to mind, although it's not a great song.
I like Kraftwerk and their song...
The Robots, it's called.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah, actually, I have that written down here. That's my favorite.
To distance myself from that, a lot of people think that's the title of the strip. We are the robots, or we are...
Oh, right, because I say it. And that's another one, not to keep plugging YouTube, but, you know, I do while away part of my day looking for old crap on the internet. Look at the video for Kraftwerk, The Robots. It's fantastic.
I have seen it.
I remember seeing it as a kid, like late night, on one of those video shows, and it warped me out as a kid. But now looking at it now, I'm like, my God, they're just so far ahead of the curve on a lot of the stuff they're doing.
Oh, man, I love those guys. Yeah.
All right, well, Chris, we've kept you on the phone for about a half hour, man. We really appreciate you calling in.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's really been fun, actually.
As we said, love the strip, wetherobots.com. And also, you got to give us the exclusive before you go on the mystery work you're working on.
Well, we were talking earlier about comparing our lives and our worst moments to those of people in the rest of the world, and the short originally came out of that exact thought, like, you know, me, I'm bitching about something, and like, you know, and then going, why am I, you know, this isn't really so bad, but the short is just kind of the robots start off in like a prehistoric time, and it's kind of a two-part little short, or two-act little thing, where I just thought the contrast between robots trying to find things to eat or things, if you butt that close enough up against robots sitting in cubicles, there's something funny about that, jarring.
I agree.
about it.
Well, we're looking forward to it, Chris.
All right, so Chris, we have one last favor to ask you, and that is, a lot of times we joke around about the corporate environment here, and one of the buzzwords that we think is really ridiculous and we make fun of a lot is the idea of piggybacking.
Right.
So this is just something to file away, that sometime when you're doing the strip and you've got a corporate situation going on and people are bantering back and forth, if you ever work in the word piggybacking, we will take that as a personal shout out to us.
I will try very hard.
Yes.
That word would fit right in.
That would make us happy, happy people.
Beautiful. Okay, well, thank you guys.
Absolutely,
yeah,
man.
Thanks, Chris. It was great.
It's got nothing to do with luck, and it's got nothing to do with sin. Sin God got it in for you to fuck, not to believe in him. Standing underneath. I'm running start.
And we're back, people. Use Wigs Radio, podcast 43. And that lovely little sweet ditty was called Past Tense, Future Perfect.
From I think I sang that in church last week.
Church, you did sing it. It's a hymn. It's a lot of pastors and preachers like to play it during their service. That was Paint It Black, Philly's greatest hardcore band, off their soon-to-be-released album New Lexicon on Jade Tree Records. Go to jadetree.com, check that out. They are one of my favorite bands. And I know, Rush, you love when I call things my favorite. I sound like a 12-year-old. But these
favorites in the world.
But I'm, as we mentioned many times during the night, I'm a very, very old man, but I still love listening to that music.
Well, what do you listen to that music while you're doing?
Running.
Oh, you run to that music.
I run it when I'm designing stuff, when I'm just like stabbing a pillow.
Do you like mosh in your house and like pump your arms up and down?
A little bit, yeah. I get into it with some of my daughter's stuffed animals, just totally wrecking the basement. But no, that's
so
like...
The reason that's because, like, you know, for me,
there's not a lot you
music,
can...
It's like background music.
Right. That's
foreground music.
I have a ton of inner rage, Todd, that I bottle up. And every now and then, listen to 30 minutes of Paint It Black is some of the best therapy.
You unload on the heavy bag.
Yeah, and you know what? The lead singer, Dan Yemen, is a noted Philadelphia area psychologist.
Huh.
So, you know, it's not like some scary guy who's in his basement, you know, who's a cutter and, you know, wearing a something... a mask over his head while he's looking at, you know, German porn. No, these guys are prominent people making fantastic music that's just a little different than most people like. You're right, it was fantastic. Speaking of fantastic guys, Russ, thank you for getting that interview with Mr. We the Robots, Chris Harding. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was good.
It's inspiring to meet people like that who just do something that they really love, they're very good at. They're very good at it in the sense that they bring something unique to the table, and they're very low-key about it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Todd, you or I, something like that, we do become popular, we'd be so loud about it. And like, well, look, you got to see what we're up to. This is awesome. And just promoting it, Todd, you would have the stuffed animals, all the characters out already.
Oh, absolutely. And if I did a phone interview, you'd have to speak to two or three of my handlers before you even got to me. You know what I mean? They have to field the questions. Yeah, he's very down to earth. Very nice guy.
Yeah, so we
sincere.
Everyone, please check out again, We the Robots. Great stuff. Guys, this has been a fantastic show. Fantastic, fantastic, spastic colons, candy canes, comics, all that good stuff. But right now, we're a little point in the show. We like to call it, is this shout-outs?
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
Hooray! Todd, shout.
If you are a YouTube watcher, whether it be in the comfort of your own living room with an Apple TV or by your computer terminal, turn your tubular to G.I. Joe Public Service Announcements or G.I. Joe Public Service.
Oh.
Punch that in. Have you seen these?
No, but I remember them.
Okay, well, you remember them. They used to be on the tail end of the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Oh, now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. Yeah. Well, I don't know who's behind it because it's very viral. It's all over the place. They're at E-Bombs World. They're all over YouTube. But someone went through all of them, isolated them, and then changed all the voices and the sounds to ridiculous things. Some of them are, you know, just kind of foul language, but they're hysterical.
Really?
They're really great, especially if you remember them the first time around.
Yeah.
Because they come on, you're like, oh, I remember when he told him not to pet the strange dog. And then the guy runs up and starts cursing at him, you know? So just type in G.I. Joe Public Service and you'll be bombarded with plenty of yucks.
Cool.
G.I. Joe!
Russ, do you have something to shout aloud?
I'm blank.
You're
continue,
blank?
Jeffy.
Wow,
well,
Russ.
I spent a lot of energy this week getting the interview set up, I get a pass.
Russ, you certainly do get a pass. You really work your hiney off. Guys, speaking of happy, fun childhood memories, cartoons, and the like, when I was a young lad, I used to love a show called The Magic Garden with Paula and Carol. It was a New York-based show on Pix. And over the holidays, my Aunt Mary and I had a few beers, Smittix beer, fantastic.
You found them on YouTube?
And we were discussing how great The Magic Garden was, and we fired them up on YouTube. Just type in Magic Garden
on
YouTube.
The closing song?
Oh, yeah, they have it all. They have Hello Song. They have Magic Garden, they have the story box. What key unlocks that story box? They'll tell you here.
Oh,
all that great
gosh.
Stuff.
Wow. The ending song, Hope You Had a Good Time.
See ya.
Oh.
Hope you had a good really morning like again.
Yes.
MF-er. And then they curse like you wouldn't believe in some of the edits on here. And the nudity.
Great find.
Oh, but no, you got to check it out. And the thing was, when I was young, the Chuckle Patch, which was downright hilarious as a youngster. Uh-huh. I mean, literally, I was belly laughing. Not so funny now. Doesn't really hold up.
What was that tree? The gift tree? The gifting tree or something?
No, it's something different.
Sherwood the pink squirrel?
Sherwood was the squirrel.
Remember, the hand of the tree would come down and give them things.
Yeah.
It definitely
branch,
did.
The branch was like,
Yeah. You're right. That would signal part of the show. Like, hey, it's time for, and the branch would come down. Yeah, there was the chuckle patch.
It was called the something tree.
Yeah, it was. The shoe tree. Now, I'm not sure what it's called, but Flapper the Squirrel, Paul and Carol. So go to YouTube and check it out. It's a nice little nostalgic trip, and it make you happy.
So, I do have to say that if there's a tiny piggybacking shout.
Oh, a little shout.
You know, when Todd said a while ago that he was all about Apple TV, I have watched some Apple TV over his house, and being able to sit on your couch and search YouTube and just watch stuff.
That's what I want to do. Is it great?
It makes a big difference.
You do that, Todd?
Because what you do is you sift through, you earmark it, and then when you have people over, you show them.
Yeah, and like, and when you can just lay there with a remote, it's a lot more fun. Like, you know, I don't want to be stuck behind a computer looking for videos. It's very fun to just search things and watch them.
So if you're on YouTube and there's actually, well, most of the video quality is crappy on YouTube. Is it crappier transferred to TV?
It absolutely is. It's very grainy and pixelated, but you know what? You don't mind, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then you go to like certain things like Google Video, and certain videos that are produced by, you know, real production companies look fantastic on there.
Yeah.
If you watch that on your TV, there is a level of degradation as you
go. Well, the thing is, you're blowing it up.
Blowing it up,
a giant
screen.
So no matter what the resolution is at the small screen, it's going to be spread out and enlarged.
Oh, okay. So there's really nothing crisp and clean from the web that would be on one of your TVs.
You can't increase the number of pixels.
Oh, I know that.
You know?
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying there are certain things that, like aspect ratios, where you can... You know what I'm saying? Like, you can do it.
You can do it.
If you put your mind to it,
Jeff.
You can do it.
If you learn anything from the Magic Garden.
If you learn anything from G.I. Joe, what's their final? You can do it if you...
Now you know.
Knowing is half the battle.
All right, people. That's our show. That was Usewigs Podcast 43. Check us out on the web. Check out We the Robots. And just check yourself before you wreck yourself.
See ya. Hope you had a good time. Ta-da. Hope you'll have a good morning. We get to see you again. You could stay a while. Glad that we could say goodbye.